The word organic was given to the federal government in order to protect the livelihood of small farmers. But with that government protection, the word grew into an $80 billion a year industry. So we ask, how do they keep the money in the word organic?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1167th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lisbon who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Well, folks, for all but a tiny sliver of human history, all farmers were organic, which is to say, they did not use synthetically derived nutrients or poison crop protections. For the most, there weren't any. Then World War II came along, and from it came all kinds of new chemicals and machinery. These new tools gave farmers the ability to affect the ultimate magic, which was to substitute expensive time for inexpensive money. In other words, farmers could buy the chemicals and equipment to do the work they formerly had to do themselves, and so began the industrialization of agriculture. There were some who did not buy into the industrialization, like the Amish people, and some visionaries as well, like Robert Rodale, but for the most, they were marginalized with a smile by the industrialists. But then consumers began asking for food grown without all the poisons. Small farmers began growing that food for them using biologically intensive techniques developed through the millenniums, which is to say, farmers fed the soil and the soil fed the crops. These farmers called themselves organic as a way to distinguish themselves. People began buying their organic food and paying more for it. To protect organic farming from the depredations of industrialization, organic farmers gave their word to the federal government for safekeeping. And with that protection, organic grew into an $80 billion a year industry. And so we ask, how do they keep the money in the word organic? And who better to ask than an inspector of certified organic farmers? Laura Murray. Laura, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be with you.
Well, full disclosure here, folks. Laura is a longtime family friend and wife of a longtime associate, Scott Murray, who is a consultant to the specialty agriculture community of Southern California. All kinds of very interesting projects going on down there. So the Murrays are a family well steeped in specialty agriculture. Laura, you have a very unique position in this community. You're an inspector for the California Certified Organic Farmers, right?
That they are my inspection body of choice. Yes, I work strictly with CCOF as an independent contractor.
Gotcha. So, and there, this California Certified Organic Farmers are one of the certification agencies that exist. There's Oregon Tilth, and I suspect others as well, correct?
That's correct. There are certification bodies all across the country, and then actually some international certification bodies that are working with American companies.
Good. Well, as an inspector, you're really the person that's responsible for keeping that $80 billion in the word organic, aren't you?
I am absolutely that person, yes. My colleagues and I are diligent about that.
Well, but in reality, you are, because somehow you have to maintain the integrity of the word organic, because if you don't, people will not pay extra for it or even want to buy it if they don't think it's something special. So somebody has to be on the ground making sure what is offered is really what is there, and that would be you.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. I have a lot of people that ask me, how do I know that it's organic? And I'm just delighted to tell them about the parts of the process that I can discuss, because of course there are confidentiality concerns for each company. Mm-hmm. But of course I can speak in generalities to people about what it takes to become organic and what it takes to maintain that organic integrity. And so, yes, my life is based a lot in integrity and people telling the truth and just being sure that they are telling the truth.
Good. Well, tell us a little bit about your journey through the world of inspections, because you've pretty much run the gamut of all organic agriculture, have you not?
Well, we have been organic farmers. We're currently not farming our own crops at our own farm, but we have grown quite a lot over the years. And 12 years ago, I was encouraged to take a training to become an inspector for grower operations, all the folks that grow the fresh food. So farms, you know, throughout Southern California, that's where I kind of cut my teeth as far as being an inspector. And just 10 years ago this month, I became a handler inspector. And the handlers are the folks that take the fresh organic agricultural materials and turn them into products such as juices or pasta sauce or ketchup.
Or Annie's Organic Lemon Drop Cookies.
Oh, that sounds yummy.
Yeah, I found them in the studio this morning. So,
So
you are one of the people who will like go to Annie's and say, yeah, and inspect them to see if mm-hmm. that word organic on the box really is true. Then,
that is exactly right. It's quite an arduous process for a company such as Annie's. I haven't disclosure again. I have not inspected any of the Annie's facilities, so I'm not.
But that's what a handler does, is inspect.
That's exactly right. They receive product that has been grown organically, and then they can change that product into something that is a finished cookie or a loaf of bread or mm-hmm. anything like that that you see the organic seal on. That's what a handler inspector will take a look at.
Is it any different than the word processor? I know they used to use process.
It's the same, yeah.
Same
processors
thing.
And handlers are essentially the same thing.
Okay, good. So they're on the same page. Well, mm-hmm. So you've pretty much run the entire inspection. So I suspect we're going to get a lot of great stories from Laura about inspecting the world of organic. But before we do, Laura, I'd like to have you help us come to grips with just how on earth this organic industry works and how that is all managed. And I guess it would start, of course, with the law itself, which was the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the first step in the state of California. We were very encouraged by all the agriculture that was happening in the state that was organic based at the time. And we moved towards having a national law with information from California growers and other growers across the country. And the CCOF, California Certified Organic Farmers, they were instrumental in moving the process forward and have been ever since. They've been working to expand markets in within the guidelines that they have as a certifier.
Mm-hmm. And talk about expanding markets. My goodness, from 1990 to today, I can't think of any industry except maybe Google that has blossomed to such an extent. Pow.
So we have
the law, and then we have to have some kind of government agency that holds on to the law or superintends it, right?
That's exactly right. All of the certifiers across the country are accredited by the National Organic Program, the NOP, through the USDA. And so every one of those certifiers has to have their own inspection from USDA auditors to be sure that random files can be pulled and the proper work is being done to verify practices and verify paperwork.
Okay, then inside that giant Department of Agriculture building in Washington, D.C., there's an office called National Organic Program. And that would be the one that's superintending this incredible industry that's blossomed across the United States. Well, we're up for our first break here, folks, but I want to let you know that this is the Food Chain Radio Program. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we have an old friend, Laura Murray, who is an inspector of organic farms and processors and handlers. And so we're going to learn how this $88 billion a year operation or business industry works. And Laura is the person responsible for making sure all that money stays in the word organic. That's a big job, girl. Wow.
It is a big job.
We will be right back after these very important messages. Please do stay tuned.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, I suspect it takes a good government agency to keep control of this organic industry that's grown from nothing to $88 billion in a couple short, less than two decades, from 1990 to 2018, I guess just about three decades there. But what an explosive piece of business, just boom. So we have the National Organic Program headquartered somewhere in the giant Department of Agriculture building in Washington, D.C., and it's the guiding government agency. And below that, we have the National Organic Standards Board. What's that?
The NOSB is an advisory committee that takes a look at different issues within organic to advise the NOP how industry and interested stakeholders, if you will, would like to see organic rules expand, change. What they do is they take a look at materials that can be used or things that can be added to food that maybe aren't available in sufficient quantities to be used for organic, and we would have to perhaps use non-organic items.
Mm-hmm.
So that they do more than just that as well, but they're there as an advisory committee, and they have quite a bit of sway, but hopefully they get listened to plenty for what for what they get together. They get together on a calendar basis, and it's folks who are involved in business. So there are stakeholders who are growers, stakeholders who are retailers, stakeholders who are makers of products as well.
So one would suspect then that this committee, the National Organic Standards Board, is where all the fur flies when they're having meetings.
I've heard small notes about that. Yes, indeed. I'm not familiar with a lot of it, though.
Well, so here's a committee that decides what can and what cannot be included in organic farming and products. So I would suspect there are a lot of people that are lobbying this committee to have their goodies included in the mix, right?
I would imagine that's true.
Yeah. So is it this committee that recommended the allowance of hydroponics to be included in organic farming?
I have a colleague who has so much information about participating with that as an advisory person to the NOSB. There was a lot of pressure, from what I understand, from the hydroponic growers, and the NOP decided to approve it with a caveat, and it's not my area of expertise, to be frank about it.
So, well, that's okay.
But it did get approved in the U.S. That's true. It's not approved in Canada. No, hydroponic products cannot be imported into Canada, and they do not allow that in the Canadian rules. But the NOP has passed it.
So when controversial, you know, subjects come up or topics or issues come up, I guess the National Organic Standards Boards being comprised of stakeholders. It's where people fight it out, and then they make their recommendation to the NOP, and the NOP either approves or does not. So that would be about
that's correct.
Good. Okay. From there, then, we come to the certification agencies, correct?
That's right.
No, they are not government agencies.
No, the USDA has the NOP set up to have plenty of steps of separation, if you will. Just as I'm an independent contractor, those certifiers are independent from the USDA.
Okay, so the government agencies essentially end at the National Organic Standards Board. Then they go into the certifiers, and the certifiers are essentially the agencies responsible for making sure that organic is organic.
That's correct. The NOP is the administrator for the certification agencies in terms of overseeing the processes that they go through and giving them permission, essentially, to have certification bodies that different companies can choose regionally or locally or nationally. In other words, there are companies all along the East Coast of the United States and companies in Mexico and Canada that are certified with CCOF. They don't have to be U.S. companies.
So then go ahead.
The companies that choose to be certified organic, they get to do their due diligence and find the certifier of their choice. We're all certifying to the same law.
Okay. So all of the certifiers must certify to the same law. No cheating allowed.
No.
Okay, good. Now, how does a certifier like CCOF or Oregon Health, how do they go about certifying an organic farm?
If you were starting a farm and you wanted to be certified, you would begin by filling out an application. You would go through the process of describing your practices on your farm and describing the materials that you use for fertility and describing your acreage and what it is that you're going to grow and who what you'll be marketing. All of these things are pulled together in a document that's called an organic system plan. And you have to go back and forth a little bit with the certifier to be sure you have everything listed in that plan in a manner that could be understood, to have it turned over to an inspector to then come and do an inspection.
Okay. So you have to tell your story to the certifier.
You have to tell your story and explain it broken down in a manner that addresses every point of the National Organic Program. So it's about your systems. If you make compost, how the compost is made and what the materials are in your compost. If you're making a product, you have to include, let's say you're making candy, you have to include all of your suppliers and all of their organic certificates in your paperwork, and you have to describe your facility and the processes for your facility. It's quite a complicated process, and the larger companies who have certified organic products sometimes have people on staff who manage that certification and who manage adding new products and so on.
A lawyer, a patent attorney. There you go. Wow.
They possibly have them as well.
So to begin the process, you have to have an organic business plan listing everything. And it has to be fact, can't be fiction.
It has to be verifiable.
Ah. And that's where you come in.
That's where I come in. I am there to observe and report on what I see. So a first or initial inspection is very different from an annual inspection, because the first inspection takes a look at what a grower is doing, takes a look at the boundaries of the farm, takes a look at what's happening on the other side of the fence of the farm to be sure that there's nothing.
The neighbor's not spraying.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so if
you... they're not spraying anything, and if they are spraying anything, is there drift potential, and what are they doing to protect the organic integrity of their particular farm?
Wow, so it's kind of like a preliminary inspection. Okay, you say you want to do this, and we're going to look at it and see if you actually can do this, right? If the possibility is here for disaster that we have to really watch for in the future.
Right, and isn't that interesting? That starts with looking at the paperwork. If the paperwork can't translate clearly to a reviewer at the certifier that, oh, it looks like this is possibly a place that has enough separation from potential drift of pesticides, and it looks like it's a place that they can have clean water come onto their farm and water their crops, and they can clean those crops properly after they've been harvested and get them to market. It looks like we could send an inspector, one of our independent inspectors, to go take a look at it. And then the inspector essentially is the set of eyes.
Okay, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to go inspect when we come back from this break. Michael Olson with Laura Murray and you.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we've pretty much gone through the entire process from the law, the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990. We established an agency, the National Organic Program, that exists in a giant Department of Agriculture building in Washington, D.C., and underneath the National Organic Program, we have the National Organic Standards Board, which decides what can and what cannot be included in organic farming and organic products. And then we have the certification agencies that are responsible for certifying what is organic. And then where the rubber really meets the road in this entire process, to my way of thinking, are those people who go and inspect. And one of them is Laura Murray, who is a independent organic inspector, currently working with the California Certified Organic Farmers Association. Laura has been in the business of inspecting for quite a while and pretty much has inspected just about a whole bunch of things throughout. I guess, where have you been? Where has your travels taken you, Laura?
I get around. I inspect local juice companies that are making cold pressed juice. I inspect restaurants. I inspect retail stores. I inspect farms. I inspect packing sheds where they're packing avocados or citrus. I inspect companies that make, those plastic containers that little babies can eat juice or food out of now. I inspect companies that make that cold pressed food, and it's been a remarkable experience for doing these inspections for the last dozen years. I'm just so delighted by what I've seen with expansion in the good, clean food world.
And what do the makers of organic food, the farmers, the processors, the handlers, as you were, what do they do when Laura Murray walks in the door?
Well, they invite me to, the farmers take me for a ride around their farm, and I go and take a look at the crops, and I take a look at the boundaries, and then we review paperwork. When I go to a handler, we have a little bit of a different process because I have to go and take a look at what is happening in the facility and then review scads and scads of paperwork.
So you get to have a free look around. And then you have to dig into the paperwork.
Exactly right. I have to take a look. For me personally, it's different for every inspector, but for me, it worked really well to see what's happening first so that I can then translate it to the records that they're showing me.
And how many records do they show you?
I have access to everything. Okay. So if this is a company, for example, that is a grower that has organic and non-organic agriculture, which that happens. There are a lot of growers that have organic as part of their program. I have access to all of the records, and I can see all of the sales records and all of the fertility and pest control input records and the seed records for the farms. I have to verify all of that information. There are quite a few details that the growers have to prove, if you will, that they've accomplished during their year and of growing. And every grower and every handler has an inspection every year.
So you probably know more about farmers and processors and handlers than the IRS does.
I certainly have a different perspective than they do. They're looking at numbers, and I'm looking at numbers and so many other things as well. Of course, I have to verify at a handler, for example, that enough organic product comes in to create the organic product that goes out. And so that can be quite a daunting task to verify those numbers correctly. What we are doing essentially is being sure that no non-organic products are ending up in organic products and being called and falsely called organic.
Now, that would take some very astute mathematics, in my estimation. Mm-hmm. I mean, to actually make calculations as to whether enough compost was put on the field to produce the amount of crops being sold.
Well, that is not what I was speaking of at that point. It's really that if I go into a company that's making a salsa, for example, I have to be sure that enough onions came in for the batches that they make of the salsa. On a farm, it's a different story. I have to have a general idea of each type of operation that's farming to verify that the production that they had, let's say, of Valencia oranges on 10 acres was sufficient for the amount of land that they have, or if it was an average or a low harvest, or if it's a high harvest, then you have to wonder what's going on here. What is that fertility? What is that compost that you're putting on? And so on.
So you're really looking for mysteries.
Yes. I am the mystery searcher. I look at people and I think, are you telling me the complete truth? Of course, I've built relationships with people over the years, mm-hmm. and the small growers and the larger growers. I've worked with the same people, but I have to look at them and I have to listen very carefully. I look and see if they are they flinching when they're telling me that?
You know, one of the things that I've always said is that as much as possible, I like to buy food with its farmer's face on it, because mm-hmm. I can look into the farmer's eyes and see what's in the food. Is that what you're saying?
I think, yes, you are absolutely right about that. So if you would just shop at a farmer's market, for example, for folks who have that available, you can look in the farmer's eye or the eye of the person that farmer hired. But if you're living in an urban area and you go to your local grocery store, well, that farmed product, that bunch of kale, might have been grown by a large company, not a local company, but a large company, and they might have shipped it a long ways away, and maybe they grew it in their winter growing grounds away from where their main office is by hundreds of miles. And I have to look in the eyes of that grower and know that they're keeping their word and know that they're not trying to get rid of ditch weeds by spraying Roundup and rather than doing their organic practices to get rid of their ditch weeds.
Now, if you were on that farm, you'd know in an instant whether they were using Roundup on the ditch weed, because the ditch weed would be burned back. It would look like it had been burned, right? But if you're not there, how do you know? So, folks, hold on. We're going to get some real interesting things right now, because we're going to go looking into the farms and processors of our country and see just how organic they are. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Laura Murray and you. Do stay tuned, right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, just think of it. From 1990 to today, this organic food industry exploded into an $88 billion a year business. How do they keep that $88 billion in the word organic? Well, they hire Laura Murray, who is an inspector of certified organic farms and agriculture, and people like Laura, to make certain that the integrity of that word organic is always there, which might be the most interesting job in the world so far. It certainly sounds like it, Laura. My goodness. So when we're talking about, you know, when you're able to look into a farmer's eyes or a handler's eyes, you can pretty well guess what's in the food. But what happens when you get organic food from China? How do we know?
Well, we do receive updates from the USDA on a pretty regular basis about fake certificates that are being issued, both from China and from India. They do have certification bodies in China, and there have been some false certificates that have been used just in the last year. The food, I have had the pleasure of inspecting U.S. food. I have not seen any food coming from China going into U.S. products so far in my career. I've not seen that. I've done a couple of desk audit type inspections where I'm just looking at paperwork where somebody is hiring another company in China, perhaps to package teas or something like that.
Right.
But it's pretty rare.
So in China, there are certifiers of organic food in China, but they must operate under the same organic rules that everybody here must operate under as well. Correct?
That's right. There are equivalency agreements, and generally for any Chinese operation that wants to sell their product in the United States, it must be certified to the same standards as the National Organic Program, the NOP.
Okay.
And with other countries as well, we have equivalencies with the EU, we have equivalency agreements with Japan, we have equivalency agreements with Canada. So that products that are coming from those countries have grown under generally the same circumstances as we are requiring in the United States.
And if everybody is behaving themselves, just might work. But.
There you go.
Always the but. Well, Laura, as you travel around, what is the most difficult thing to grow organically?
Oh, that's a great question. I think in terms of the extremes of weather, dates are very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the season, it looks really simple from the outside, that you've got this beautiful date grove and they have just a couple things they have to do during the year. But then the harvest takes place when it's 118 degrees.
Oof.
And this is a harvest that's a pretty labor-intensive harvest. They've got to imagine a 20-foot-tall tree. You get to go into a cage that's lifted by a conveyance, and you have to pick those date bunches off of the tree, and it's 118 degrees, and you're in completely covered clothing. In other words, you've got a hat, you've got a scarf to protect your neck, you've got long pants, long sleeve shirts, and you've probably got neoprene gloves, because you have to protect yourself from the heat. So that's one level that I think would be extreme to deal with, those delicious dates coming off at such a high temperature.
And you've been up there, haven't you, Laura?
Well, one of my favorite stories is the opportunity to go up in one of those cages at the beginning of the process of the dates growing. I felt like a kid in a candy store. I got to go up in the cage of one of my clients, and I got to go up in the cage that wraps around the palm tree, and I did a little bit of, I suppose you could call it lacing, the way that we lace a large tree to remove branches to give it some air. You do a similar thing with dates, and the ladies work so fast, pulling off every other date that hangs down off of a stem. And it was just one of the delights and highlights of my career to have a chance to go up in that cage for 5 minutes. It was crazy hot and so much fun.
And that was at the beginning of the season.
It was at the beginning, yes. We hadn't even gotten it. It was about 102 degrees that day.
Wow. And so it's you really do develop a relationship with the people you inspect, don't you? I mean, they're relying on you.
Yeah.
And do you help them? I mean, is it possible?
I cannot help them.
You cannot. There's nothing you can do to help?
No, there is a line. No, there is an absolute line that is drawn. And that line looks like inspecting or consulting.
Ah.
And my inspecting can come up to the point where I cannot give them any of my expertise. And don't you know, I've collected some info over the years of how to do great organic practices.
I would think so.
Yeah, exactly. And so I cannot give them any advice on fertilizer or pest control measures. I cannot give them any advice on where to sell their product, which is very difficult because, you know, a small grower with an acre of avocados sometimes has a hard time themselves looking for a place to sell their product.
Sure. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program, Michael Olson, with Laura Murray, who is an inspector of organic agriculture working with the California Certified Organic Farmers. When we come back, I want to ask Laura the real tough question, which is, who broke your heart as an inspector? This is the Food Chain, right back. Please do stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, Laura, you've inspected a lot of organic agriculture through the years. What was the one organic farmer or processor or handler that broke your heart?
I was traveling around looking at a lot of groves around Southern California here in my home, and for a company that does packing and grove services for citrus growers. And we had gone to numerous parcels that day to look at these beautiful citrus groves and avocado groves and so on. This particular grower was part of the grower group, if you will, and he lives up this driveway with this beautiful grove with about three or four different types of citrus and avocado growing on his property. And as we go driving up the driveway, I'm looking at the side of the driveway and I'm thinking, this looks exactly like Roundup was sprayed here. Truly, it broke my heart because the driveway had trees on either side of it. And I look at these trees. He's built the soil for years and years. He's taken really good care of these trees with his grove service. And this one thing he chose to do took a lot of his trees out of the organic production because of the drift. We had just had rain. He had just sprayed that Roundup, which possibly leached onto the roots of these other trees. And it's heartbreaking to see that. I was so sad for him. Economically, it can be devastating. And it was just a simple thing that he should not have done. And he should have talked to his grove service first before he did it.
So here is a professional at servicing groves and servicing organic groves. And yet,
right.
And yet when it comes to killing the weeds on his driveway, he used Roundup.
He had contracted with the grove service to grow all of his trees, to take care of the management of his trees, but he didn't communicate with them when he, as the owner of the property, chose to spray Roundup. And so your heart breaks because, well, first I'm human, and I'm compassionate. And secondly, I know what it takes to get that crop to be absolutely perfect for what that Grove Service wants to harvest and sell. And I know what it takes to knock down a few weeds so you can re-asphalt your driveway. It was tough.
What happened when you said, excuse me?
It's a very gentle conversation because I do have to speak in a manner that saying things like, it appears that this was sprayed. We need to find out if, in fact, it was. And then they verified that, yes, in fact, it was. And so the process then goes to I have to document which trees possibly were affected, and they have to be marked so that they're not harvested as organic. There's just all these procedures that the grower and the homeowner had to accomplish so that the certifier would be able to keep the rest of the property in organic agriculture and just remove those trees in what we call a buffer for 3 years to allow for that glyphosate Roundup spraying to dissipate, if in fact it does, and bring the soil back into organic integrity.
Wow. What would be your one piece of advice for people who are faced with an inspection?
Be ready. Have your paperwork ready. Be ready to answer all of the questions, and don't be nervous. We're there to observe and report what they're doing. We know that they're doing the right thing, and if they're not, we're going to find it.
So you're going to find it. Okay, thank you very much, Laura Murray, and thank you all for tuning in. Remember, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.